So we are starting chapter 10. Actually, we started last week. We did the first verse. And as we had talked last week, the chapter 10 is Vibhuti Yoga, or the divine glories of the Lord. Where can I find the Lord? Because they say the Lord is everywhere, but I don't see him. So just as if you are, say, tracking an animal elephant, you may not see the elephant, but you see the footprints and you see the where he plucked the leaves and all, and that's how you can track the elephant. So how do we track the Lord? Where can I see him? So here the Lord has given us footprints, or has given us marks. He says, in these places you can see me. So that's why this is called the divine glories. Where are the glorious places in which we see this Lord? And that's why this chapter is very beautiful, because it's a very practical way of seeing the Lord's glory and his Lord's beauty everywhere. So last week we had done the first verse where the Lord says, I am giving you this message because you love to listen. And that is very important, that when we go to the spiritual discourses, when Swamiji is here, or when we are listening, or even when we are reading the scriptures, unless you have a love for the subject, you're not going to do well, whether it's science or whether it's computers or whether it's basketball or whether it's, you know, agriculture. Unless you love what you're doing, you're not going to be successful. So here also he sees that Arjuna loves to listen to the teacher. And that is how we should approach this subject, that with total love and wanting to know. And then he says, I am telling this for your benefit, because the Lord has our benefit in mind. And that's why this whole Bhagavad Gita was given, because this Bhagavad Gita has not been given to Arjuna alone. See, we always read it as, oh, okay, there's Arjuna there who was 8,000 years ago, was confused in the battle of Mahabharata, and he did not know what was his duty. And then the Lord came, and the Lord gave him the message and cleared his delusion. Yeah, that is very good. But the Bhagavad Gita has been composed for us. So we should take it as the Bhagavad Gita has been composed for me. The Bhagavad Gita has been composed for me. I am the one that is studying it. And it's not a dialogue between the Lord and a student, but with the Lord and myself. So I am Arjuna, and I am the one that has to be benefited by this knowledge. And so with that attitude, we should study this text. And that is very, very important, that every word in this pertains to me. It is something very practical that I can start applying in my life from tomorrow itself, from today itself. So that is the attitude. A, I should have love for the subject, and B, I should have a willingness going to change what I have been doing. Swami Tejomayanandaji, is our head of the Chinmaya Mission, always says, if you keep doing what you have been doing, you will keep getting what you have been getting. So if you want to improve, or if you want to change, if you want to get better, you have to change. You have to make a conscious effort to move away from this limited world and try to discover that higher self. Only then you will get permanent peace, permanent happiness, permanent joy. And then only will your life be worthwhile. So the Bhagavad Gita is a very practical text. It's like a demonstration which takes us directly to the truth. So we'll do the second verse today, chapter 10, the second verse.
Name vidu suraganaha prabhavam namaharshayaha aham adirhi devanam maharshinam cha sarvashah.
Okay, so I don't know something. So what do? I go to an expert. Say I don't know construction and I want to build a building. So I find an architect who can make the plans, and a building contractor who knows all the codes. See, I have a problem in physics or mathematics, I go to a, you know, physicist or the university or the mathematician. So here now I don't know who God is, where he is. So what do? I go to the experts. I go to the great rishis or maybe to the great devtas in heaven. You know, maybe they might know, or the great rishis, the great help me. So, but here the Lord says, sorry.
Name vidu suraganaha.
Name means not. Me means may. Vidu suraganaha. Even the gods in heaven, suraganaha, all the gods in heaven, we think, oh my God, they are so close to him. You know, Indra and the god of the wind, Vayu, and all these Brahmaji and all of these, the god of thunder, the god of rain, the god of all of these. My God, they should be very close to him. Name vidu. They don't know me, he says. Prabhavam, and they do not know my origin. Prabhavam means na origin. And na maharshaya, even the great rishis. You mean the great rishis? Oh my God, Bhrigu and all this Vishwamitra and all of them don't know you? He says, no, they don't know me. He says, then who am I? Then why am I sitting in this class? Let me go home and watch football. If they don't know you, then who am I? I am a nobody. I am an ordinary citizen. I am not a great rishi. I am not a great Deva sitting in the heavens. I am just an ordinary individual on earth. If they don't know you, then how can I know you? So it becomes a little bit discouraging, but we shall go into the details. He says, no, don't get discouraged. You can know me, even though they do not know me. And why don't they know me? He says, you know, the Lord says, they do not know me. Why? Because aham adi. I am the adi. I am the beginning. When he says he means indeed. I am the beginning of Maharshi Nam and Deva Nam, Chasarvasha, all the rishis, all the great sages, and even all the gods in heaven, I am the beginning of them. So I am the creator, I am the beginning. So when we say they do not know, now what do we mean by they do not know? The rishis are the great sages. So it says, I am the beginning of the rishis and of the devas. Now, when you talk about knowing, one is intellectually knowing, you know, that I know something. But they say that the Lord cannot be known as we know something, like I know this chair, or I know this book, or I know this mic. So they say, well, why can't I know the Lord? Why can't I see him here? If you say God is everywhere and I want to see Vishnu, or I want to see Krishna, or I want to see the Father in heaven, why cannot I see him in front of me just as I can know everything else? So they say that God cannot become an object of your knowledge. God cannot be known. Puranas, they describe that the rishi sat for years in meditation, and then finally the Lord appeared in front of him, and that is because that was the way they wanted to see. So the Lord, to satisfy that rishi's desire, appeared before him or the great sage. But when that sage experiences the Lord, he experiences him, he or she, whoever that great, maybe it's Mirabai or maybe it's the Tukaram, or whoever experiences the Lord within and without. And their final experience is that the Lord is the one that is inside, outside, everywhere, and everything is the Lord and Lord alone. So when we say that he is the subject and cannot be the object, what we mean is that everything is known by him. This is this consciousness that is the Lord's presence, the self, and that the consciousness is within me and without, and is the one consciousness that is everywhere, that pervades everything. Now the consciousness is the one that is illumining my body, my mind, and my intellect. So with my body I can see the objects, with my mind I can feel the emotions, with my intellect I can think the thoughts and the concepts. But the body cannot see the Lord, the mind cannot feel him, and the intellect cannot think about him or know him, because he is the subject. He is the illumining factor. Like Swamiji in his, I think those of you who have the green book, says that a person looking through a telescope. Now with a telescope, a scientist is sitting in the observatory and he's looking at the out in the, and he can see all the millions of stars and everything he can see. But can the Can the telescope see the viewer? The one that is behind the telescope, can the telescope see that? No, the telescope can see everything in the universe, but cannot see the subject, cannot see the one that is watching through the telescope. Another example Swami Chinmayananda has given in the past, he says, like there is a flashlight. Now, in the flashlight, there is a battery. And so the room is completely dark and all the power is gone. And so you turn on the flashlight. And with that flashlight, you can see everything in the room. You can see the wall, the clock, the people, the chairs. But somebody says, I want to see the battery. Is it ever ready or is it Duracell? So can the flashlight see the battery? No. The moment you take the battery out and put it in front of the flashlight will go off. So the flashlight can see everything in the room except the battery, which is illumining it. So similarly, the consciousness in me is illumining all my experiences. With my eyes, I am seeing because of the consciousness. With my nose, I am smelling. With my ears, I am hearing. With my mind, I'm feeling all the emotions, good and bad, joy and sorrow, you know. Some of you must be happy, some of you must be getting bored. So all those emotions that you are feeling at this moment are because of the consciousness, because every one of you is conscious. And the intellect is thinking the thoughts, you know, success and failure and good and bad and judging and discriminating. Well, how am I able to do that? Because of the consciousness. If the consciousness were not functioning at this moment through me, I would be lying, you know, flat on the ground and somebody would have to carry me to the nearest cemetery. So it is the consciousness that is as if peeping out. In fact, Shankaracharya ji in his Dakshinamurti Stotram, he says, Nana Chidra Ghato Darasthita Mahadipas Prabhabhaswaram Jnanam Yasya Tu Chakshuradi Karna Dwara Bahispandate. He says, just as in a pot, if you have a pot and that has many holes, nowadays in Halloween we see these pumpkin with many holes, and say you put in that pumpkin or in that pot, you put a little bulb. Now the bulb will go out. Suppose the room is completely dark and only that pot is hanging there and the bulb is in the pot. The moment you turn on the current, the bulb illumines and through the holes, it goes out and illumines the whole room. If you turn the bulb off, obviously that part will not be illuminating. So the consciousness as if goes out through the eyes and I can see the objects, through the ears I can hear the sounds, through the nose I can smell the perfume or the flowers. So the consciousness is the one that illumines everything, and the consciousness cannot become an object. Because if consciousness were to become an object, then there would be another consciousness to know that consciousness. So that means there were two consciousnesses. And we know there is not two. There is only one consciousness. And only he can know himself. We cannot know him. Only he can know himself. So, it's like the dream. Now, in a dream, I am in the dream, and then a person comes and tells me, you know, dreamer, you are in the dream, but actually you are the waker. And I am, you know, in the dream, I am somewhere in the forest in Africa and being chased by a tiger. And then the Swami comes and tells me, you know, this tiger is not real. This forest is not real. Even you are not real. You are just in the dream. You are really a waker and you are sleeping comfortably in your home in Bakersfield. I'll say, no. What are you talking, Swami? See this tiger chasing me and I'm running up the tree because I'm afraid the tiger is going to eat me up. So no matter how much that wise person may tell me that you are not this dreamer, you are actually sleeping comfortably in your bed in Bakersfield, I'm not going to trust him. Why? Because I can see the tiger and I'm sweating and I'm afraid and I'm out of breath and I'm desperately climbing up the tree. But in that fright, I wake up. And then I wake up and I'm sweating. And then I realize, oh my God, I'm in my bed in Bakersfield. I was never in that dream. I was actually sleeping here. The dream was a creation of my mind. So having woken up, then a dreamer will not know the waker, but dreamer will become the waker. If somebody tells the dreamer, you are not the dreamer, but you are the waker, he will never believe it. He will never. But when he wakes up, he will realize that I am the waker who I thought myself with this delusion to be the dreamer. And in my delusion, I thought myself to be the dreamer. And then in the dream, I suffered all the joys and sorrows of the dream. In fact, none of it was real. There was no tiger. There was no forest. Even I was not there. But it was all a creation of my mind. So similarly, here it is said that you are actually that consciousness. You are in reality that consciousness. But not knowing that, you imagine yourself to be this individual being, this limited individual, this body, mind and intellect. You can call it Anil or Pankaj or Diana or whatever name you want to give it. But all of you are that one consciousness. And who is playing a particular role of a mother or a father or a doctor or an engineer or a student or whatever roles you are playing, husband, wife. But in reality, all of us are that one consciousness. So to know that one consciousness who is God within, you have to drop your identification with this body, mind and intellect and become one and understand that I am that consciousness. So these rishis and these devas, when he said they do not know me, means they do not know me as an object, but they have experienced a rishi, maharishis who are realized, have experienced that consciousness within, and then they have understood that I am that consciousness. So they do not know the Lord as an object. Nobody can know him. Only way you can know him is in your meditation or in your silence of your mind when you drop your body identification and you realize that I am not this body, this mind or this intellect. These are clothes, like in the second chapter Krishna says that these are Vasamsi jirnani yatha vihai navani grihnati naroparani. Just as a person gives up old clothes to put on new clothes when the old clothes no longer fit him or suit him, so the individual drops the body and takes a new body. So understanding that this body is just an outfit that I am wearing and I can drop it anytime because I am that permanent reality. And with that understanding, that is called knowing. So to know the truth, you have to become the truth. So they say the knower of Brahman becomes Brahman. You cannot know him as a separate entity, like a river. The river says, I want to see how big is the ocean. River cannot judge, no matter how much you may tell the river, you know, ocean is huge, ocean is this. But only when the river merges into the ocean and then she sees, oh, wow, it's so vast. But by then the river is gone. The river has become one with the ocean. So is that consciousness. But we try to look for God outside. And, you know, we say, oh, we go to the church or temple or mosque, or you may go to Badrinath, or you may go to Jerusalem, or you may go to Mecca. Yeah, the Lord is there in all those places. But the closest he is in my heart. So knowing him means to become one with him. And that individuality has to be dropped. And that's why he says, Name vidu suraganaha. The devas cannot know me. He said, wow, how can they not know me? You know, they are so close to you. And we have this idea of heaven, as you know, this beautiful place where, you know, everything is fine. You never have to go to the office and you never have to do the dishes. You think food and the food appears. And then you say go and it disappears. And then you have all the time sunny weather. You can play golf 365 days, 24 hours a day. And, you know, anything you want, it appears, you know. And then here I'm on earth. You know, I have to go to work 8 hours a day. I slog in the office. And then I come home and then I have to deal with my spouse. And then I have to deal with the children screaming. And then my boss yelling in the office. And then my whole life, 20 to 30 years I've spent in studying. And by the time I finish my studies and then I go to work, the next 20, 30 years I'm trying to make ends meet and earn for my family. And where, who has time for God? Who has time to realize? And by the time every children are gone, it's already too late. I'm in my late 50s. I'm close to retirement. So nikal gaya time. It's too late. So So we have this idea that life here is very tough and oh, there is everything is beautiful. But they say that it does not matter whether you're in heaven or whether you are here. You have to have the right knowledge. Ananda, who can give us this knowledge, then you can realize the truth here and now itself. And even Indra, it is said, the king of the gods had to go to a guru and studied for 99 years. He spent 99 years studying to realize the truth. So the point of the matter is that you cannot know the Lord as an object, whether you are a rishi or whether you are a deva or whether you are an ordinary individual. You can know the Lord as the consciousness, as the life principle. And when your mind becomes completely quiet, see, the problem with us is that the mind is the obstacle to realization, because the mind is too active, too many thoughts, and too many tendencies, and too many desires. I want this, I want that. And where does this come from? It comes from the vastness, from the unfulfilled desires. So the more desires you have, the more thoughts you have, the more emotions you have, and then the more you act. I want this, I want this, I want this, I want that. So this is slowly reduce your desires. Slowly, you know, have an attitude of contentment. Not that you don't stop working, but do not work out of an idea that this job or this action will make me complete. I am complete. I am doing a job as a duty. Whatever role has been assigned, I do it. But not with the idea that it will give me some great happiness. The happiness comes from within. And as you reduce your desires and as you develop contentment, especially in this country, most of us, you know, are financially comfortable and we are doing reasonably well. So slowly reduce your desires. If I have, you know, I have already, 50 outfits in my closet, why do I need another 3? You know, I have so many pieces of jewelry. Why do I need another, you know, jewelry or another diamond? Or what? I have, my car is working fine. Why do I need the latest model? So slowly, my house, I am comfortable. Why should I, you know? So the idea is that you slowly reduce your desires and say that I have done enough for the world to accumulate. I want to accumulate spiritual upliftment. I want to know who I am. And as you reduce your desires through service, through loving the Lord, and through the right knowledge, then the consciousness which is within us will shine forth. We actually have that consciousness, but it is covered by this layer of desires. Just as if there is a bulb and you put a blanket around it, a lamp. Now the lamp is shining bright, but the blanket is covering it, and the room is still dark. So the bulb is lit, but it's the blanket. The moment you remove the blanket, the bulb which was already lit will illumine the room. So similarly, the consciousness is already lit within us. We are that consciousness. But the reason you don't feel it, because you have covered it with the blanket of desires. So they say reduce your desires and quieten your mind. Because the mind, the more it runs, the more it takes away the vision of the reality. So through meditation, through prayers, through service, you reduce your desires. And as you reduce your desires, the mind and intellect become quieter. And that quiet mind and intellect, the consciousness, is visible. It is there. So that is the essence of this verse, that I am the creator of everything. Everything, all the devas, all the gods in heaven, the rishis, the whole universe, I created. I was there first and then I created the whole universe. So an object cannot know the creator like a pot. Can it know the pot maker? No, because the pot gets its existence from the pot maker, and that is the essence of this verse. And Swamiji in his commentary talks a little bit about the sages, which was a little difficult to understand. So those of you who might have read, I thought I would just explain that briefly. He has given the symbolic meaning. One is, of course, the 7 rishis are the great sages, the great realized masters. But he says the 7 rishis represent the 7 factors of creation. So in his commentary, he says, when the total consciousness, which we call as God or Brahman, identifies with the total intellect, because there is a total mind and intellect, which is the, like there is an individual mind each and every one of us has, but the total mind is the all our minds put together, plus all the plants' intellect and the birds and the fish. So that total mind, the total intellect is called Mahat. Mahat. And we are all connected. Intellectually and mentally, we are all connected. Even though he might think, oh, my mind is different from hers or different from his. But we are all connected because at the mental level and at intellectual level, we are all one. So that total intellect is called Mahat. Mahat. Now, when that total consciousness, which we call as Om in the individual or call as Brahman, identifies with the total intellect, it creates the ego. So just as an individual consciousness, when identified with an individual body, I create an ego that I am Anil and I am a doctor and I'm separate from everybody else and this is my friend and this is my enemy and this belongs to my country and that belongs. So this ego comes because I do not realize that I am that consciousness. And if I were to realize that I am that consciousness, then I would see everybody as that consciousness. And then there would be no difference. And that's what the great saints and sages were. Because they had realized the truth and they could see the oneness among all. Which you and I have a difficulty because we are still identified with our individual body, mind and intellect. So the ego is the individuality. So the total ego is the sum total of all the egos put together. So that is the called as the Ishvara. So when the consciousness identifies with the total intellect, it creates the total ego, which is the creative force. And from this creative force, the tanmatras, the five sense objects are created. Five sense objects are created. Air, space, fire, water, earth. So these are the tanmatras are the precursors of the air, space, fire, water, earth. So the five sense objects, the ego and the intellect, create this whole universe. Just also I am also made up of the five elements, air, space, fire, water, earth, the mind and intellect, and the ego, right? And that is what everybody of us is. Somebody, you know, like the plants also have five elements, air, space, fire, water, earth, ego and intellect. You'll say, what, plant doesn't have intellect? No, plant has two. Because the plant knows that it has to grow towards the light and grow away from the darkness. So it may have a rudimentary intellect, but it does. So just as there is an individual intellect and an individual ego and the five elements, air, space, fire, water, earth, so the total universe is also created of the same five elements, the intellect and the ego. So the idea being that we are all connected. That's why in the Shweta Ashvatara Upanishad, it is a very beautiful line. It says that you cannot break a leaf here without disturbing some star billions of miles away. So if you break a leaf, you are actually disturbing the whole cosmos. So the idea is that we are all connected. Not only breaking a leaf, if you do something evil or do something hurtful, not only you are hurting yourself and hurting the individual, but creating negative waves that pervade the whole cosmos. So that is the essence of this, that the sages represent the creative force. Sages represent the creative force. Symbolically, it represents the creativity and the whole universe comes out of that. And he says, Aham adirhi dehanam maharshinam cha sarvasha. I am the beginning of all the devas. I am the beginning of all the all the rishis. And they cannot know me as an object. They can only experience me in the silence. Heart. When the mind becomes quiet, they can experience my presence. And that's why we encourage people, you know, you should sit and meditate. Because in meditation, when your mind becomes quiet, then that consciousness, you can experience, you can get faint glimpses of it. And when your ego totally becomes zero and you become one with the Lord, And that is what we see in the life of Mirabai or Jesus or Tukaram or all these great saints. When their ego was totally gone, then they became one with him. And while living, you don't have to, ego, you don't have to say that I have to die to meet the Lord. You can meet him right here because he is with you. That is the beautiful verse. Anybody would like to? Yes. That's the vasanas, the collective unconscious is the unmanifest vasanas. And the total vasanas is what they call as Ishvara or the creator. Because each one of us creates our own world based on our vasanas, which we'll talk in the next verse. But I create a world of, you know, where I meet with other physicians, and then we have this world of Chinmaya Mission where we meet with other seekers. So depending, a sports person, you know, creates a sports world where he associates with other sports people and they meet in a sports bar and watch the football game. So it is our vasanas which create the whole world. So that is the unconscious is the total vasanas. Yes. So it's very similar, yeah. I don't think the unconscious is God. I think the subconscious and the unconscious is the ignorance. The subconsciousness are the desires, and then behind that is the ignorance. Yeah, consciousness is God. It's still at the vasanas level. Yeah, they have not gone to the level of the consciousness. Yeah. And even modern science hasn't gone to that. Yeah, devas also translated as the sense organs, the eyes and the ears, because they are the illuminators, right? The eyes illumine and the ears. Yes, thank you. Because we have accumulated vasanas over 8.4 million lifetimes, 84 lakh yoni. But at least the fact that you have the knowledge, then it's possible to destroy them very fast. If you have the right attitude, and it may not happen necessarily in this lifetime, but if you start on the journey that I have these vasanas and which I have to reduce, you know, reduce my selfishness, reduce my desires, my hatred, arrogance, greed, jealousy, all my negative tendencies, and slowly, slowly, through service, through love of the Lord and through right knowledge, you can reduce your desires, reduce your vasanas, and then at least progress some way. You know, if I had to reach the top of the mountain, maybe the first day I couldn't go to the top, but I went to the, you know, 1,000 feet and I put a camp there, and then next day I start and I go another 1,000 feet, and then maybe, you know, in 10th lifetime I go to a particular place and put my camp there, and then the Lord in the next lifetime starts us right from there. That's what he says in the 6th chapter, that none of your effort is wasted. If you realize, very good. If you don't realize, at least I am progressing spiritually. And that's what one has to look within and see, am I evolving spiritually? Am I getting closer to the truth? And in this lifetime, that should be my goal. I just keep on doing it. When it is time, you know, he will then lift us up. No, heaven is a place for enjoyment. Though heaven is actually only a place for enjoyment. That is true. It's like Hawaii. Heaven is like Hawaii multiplied 100 times, you know. Actually, they do talk about it, that, yeah, there are certain evolved souls, and that if you reach that level of Brahmaji, actually there is a level above heaven, the highest heaven, called the Brahma Loka. And if you reach there, there are lower heavens where you just go enjoy and come back. And then it's like vacation, like you go to Hawaii and go for a week and come back. And then you start all over again. But there is a Brahma Loka, which is the highest. If you reach that level of heaven, then there Brahmaji, the creator himself, will teach you, to give you the highest knowledge. But why you want to wait here? You have the book here. You have the knowledge from the Lord himself. So why worry about heaven and all? We should do it right here. And that is the whole idea of this. Or you go to a bar and drink, then you are in hell. You know, so it's all different lokas right here itself. No, she's right. Yeah, no, then you just come back. until you have reached that level of accomplishment where you. But, you know, rather than worrying about heaven or hell, what I say, worry about what is here and now. Where am I? And whether there is heaven or not, we don't even know. And if what is that, truth or false? I don't know. All I know is that I have this life, and how can I make my life better so I don't suffer? And that is only through knowledge. Happiness can only come through knowledge, not through objects.